I think it's since just our second meeting, and there's still some new faces and some veteran faces that weren't at the first meeting. We'll maybe do the introductions after we honor the time of the of our two guest speakers. The agenda today is really focused on hearing from two guests and their perspectives on this Board of Trustees, hear our subcommittee reports, and then, most importantly, to schedule the next two meetings, the meetings to review candidates and the meetings to interview candidates. So any questions about the agenda? I should also announce that we are taping this just to help with those who aren't here. And I can't remember if other years maybe didn't tape, but none of us could think of any reasons why we didn't. And we know we taped the interviews because there's a procedure that's available for those who miss interviews to participate in voting. So, maybe we've got critical mass. Let's go around and introduce ourselves once again. Mention how long, for those of you who can remember, you've been on. And for those of our rookie, welcome to your first go-around. I'm Kent Eklund, and in a short meeting, for those of you who weren't here, you re-elected me to chair again this cycle, so you're stuck with me. Kelly?
Kelly Kempchen, this is my second go-around.
Okay.
Carl Primmins, is my second year.
George Castle from Alexandria, this is my sixth year.
Okay.
Liz Coppola from Eveleth, I'm a rookie.
John Pupark from St. Paul, I'm a veteran of my second meeting.
A quick learner, right.
I'm Lisa Phelan from St. Louis Park, this is my second cycle.
Mm-hmm. I'm Billy Young, St. Paul. I don't remember how many cycles, five or six. More than we want to remember, probably.
Right. Billy also has status of being the long-suffering one because she also serves on the University of Minnesota Board of Regents review, which is great to have that intersection. So,
thank you.
Great book.
Brenda Elmer from Moorhead. I think it's my third go-around.
Okay. Sally Kidd with the LCC, and this is my first time.
Right. Sally is our new Sandy, for those of you who are veterans. So, great.
I'm Joe Aiken from Bemidji, Minnesota. I'm quite a veteran.
Mm-hmm.
And I also sit on the University of Minnesota Board of Trustees advisor.
That's right. Yep. Forgot that. Yep.
Yeah. John Sudor, I'm from Rochester, and I'm with Billy. We've been on since day one, and I don't know how many years that is, 11 or 12, something like that.
Bruce Watkins from St. Cloud, and I'm in the rookie status.
Dave Larkin, Bemidji, and I'm with Bruce.
Nancy Black from the Twin Cities and Metropolitan State University, and this is my third round.
Okay. Chris Walkler, White Bear Lake. It's also my third go-around.
I failed to say that. I'm from St. Paul, and I think this is my third, too. Mm-hmm. But I can't remember.
John? John Dorn from Mankato, and just starting this year.
Great. Good.
Perfect timing.
Perfect timing. Right. Great. Good attendance. This is an important meeting for scheduling purposes. So, I'd like to welcome David Olson, who's chairing the Board of Trustees, to give some thoughts about the board and our task.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That'll be short because I told Kent I just had my eyes dilated and I can't see a thing. I have to go. I don't know if you've had that done lately. It's an intriguing process. And you should also know whether you're going to hold this against him or not. That Kent was my college advisor at St. Olaf.
Yep.
Probably will want to hold that against him.
Right.
I want to thank each of you for the work you do, serving as the current chair of the Board of Trustees. I can tell you how important it is. We only have 15 trustees, as you know, and three of them are students. And the students are a valuable part of that conversation, but obviously they're still in school and have other priorities, so we really, it is important the other 12 that we have there are paying attention. And I know that when you talk to some of the trustee candidates, you talk to them about time commitment. The way I see it, at least today, they probably need about a 20 or 25% time commitment for the Minsky Board. I think some of that number has been higher. As Nancy knows, I'm actually trying to reduce that number because I actually think we have a pretty good chancellor and we have a pretty good staff, and I think the role of the Board of Trustees is to set policy and not to manage the system. So we've really tried to focus on the policy side of things and not the management. There's 32 presidents, there's 5 or 6 vice chancellors, there's a chancellor. We think they can and should handle the management piece of this. So what we would look for in trustees are people that have open minds, that have keen interest, obviously, in higher education. I'm not sure they need a higher education background, because we have plenty of that within the Minsky system and within the Minsky staff. Nancy and I have talked about this. We have a number of folks that have come out of business. I think that's been very helpful to us as we try to look at the budget and the financial management of the institution. Might be time to take a peek at an educator or a former educator, not necessarily, but that might be an option for you to take a look at. But I think, again, most of what we do is overall policy. We don't run the system. We try to create the policy that lets the management run the system. And I guess as you're looking for trustees, I'd like to, you know, have trustees that would come our way that have that really thought in mind. I also think there are 4 trustees whose terms are finished. They came through the they were appointed by the Ventura administration. At least in my opinion, at least 2 of those would deserve a close look for coming back on. Actually, probably more than 2, but at least 2, in my opinion, deserve at least a second look at another term. And I tell you that telling you that on several occasions, I don't necessarily agree with their opinion, but I think that's actually one of the reasons to think about having them back on. I think they bring a good side to the debate, and not all our decisions are unanimous. And I think that makes for a good conversation, much like John and George at the legislature. When it's not always unanimous, I think that means sometimes we've had a pretty good debate. So that's about all the notes I can actually see, Kent. So I'm happy to answer any questions. Or
any questions or comments that this jars? I'll just throw out one. We've tended in the past to look for folks who have had some governance experience of relatively moderate to large complex systems as at least one criteria. From your perspective, important or not?
I like that. Yeah, I think it is important. To be very honest with you, we have a couple of trustees today who I think would like to run each individual campus. And not on the bad way, but I just think that takes it to a level that maybe is a little beyond what we're supposed to do. And the reason they want to do that is they're fired up about Minsky and they're fired up about higher ed. So I'm not being hard on them, but I think the governance piece and the policy piece is actually critical. I think that's very important for them to understand the difference between, you know, in the governance model, policy and management.
Yes, Nancy?
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify, David, you said that it was about 25% time. So are you using the model that's been used kind of about 40 hours a month? I know you're trying to get it down.
Right. I think that's a little high. Okay. Myself, or I think it should be too high, very honestly. If we have a staff and if we have a chancellor and if we have presidents that are doing their job, I think for a lot of people that's an ominous number. Mm-hmm. I know in my case I would say it's probably closer to 50% of my time, and if I didn't have the Chamber of Commerce say we think this is a high priority, that would be difficult. You got a couple people who are trying to run a business. Take a quarter of their time away from that is a big time commitment. On the flip side, I think every one of those people take their responsibility to heart and know that it's not going to be, you know, 5 or 10 hours, 5 or 10 hours a month. So hopefully less than 40 hours, but I guess that would be fair to share with a candidate that that's probably what they're looking at.
Thank you.
We've always distributed those hours over a 7-day period. So we said some of that might be weekend or evening reading and studying of materials,
right.
And then there are the regular monthly meetings.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to sell them short on time. I'd rather, I guess, err on the side of giving them too many hours than too few.
Great. Are there any other questions for David?
Compensation or per diem or mileage, what is the arrangement for expenses?
Some trustees do not take a per diem. Some take a per diem for every meeting. That is $55 per meeting. Mileage is based on the current IRS mileage, which I think is like 51 cents or 50 and a half cents now. Trustees that live in Greater Minnesota that come in for the board meetings, we pay for hotel. I think we pay for some or most of the meals while they're here. I think the goal is to not make it on top of the time commitment, to not make it an expense commitment.
Sure.
As well.
Yes, Joe?
Thanks for being here today.
My pleasure.
Can you give us an update on the union negotiations, mediation? Where are we at on that?
We're in them. I can't. I mean, I'm not negotiating.
You're not part of that team.
I'm hoping we're reasonably close. I hear rumors that we are, and then I hear rumors that we're not. Mm. But the staff is negotiating that. I mean, they keep us up to date. I think we're going to get an update on those negotiations next week.
And so I didn't realize a lot of it wasn't necessarily public at this point.
Actually, most of it is not public at this point.
If you think about this new class of four starting July 1st, and let's hope they all are able to fulfill their full 6-year terms. Are there any particular big issues during that 6-year period that might be unusual or that might help inform some of our thinking about candidates? For example, I'm assuming there might be a chancellor succession or transition in that 6-year period.
Maybe, Kent, to just give you we've set four goals for the next 18 months, and I think that'll help you at least get a feel for what we're looking at moving forward. The first is we know at some point over the next 6 years we will have a new chancellor. And obviously one of the key roles of the Board of Trustees will be to manage that selection process. Another area where we're going to focus our time is on serving the underserved. Very concerned about future workforce, where we're going to find them, who they are, how we get younger people interested in college, particularly in a number of ethnic groups. And so we're interested in diversity. We're interested in serving the underserved. We're going to have a major, hopefully two major projects with the African American community and also the Hispanic community, trying to get, and perhaps one more group. So we're trying to take a look at those kinds of issues. Also very interested in science, technology, engineering, those that are math, that whole STEM initiatives. We're interested in obviously trying to encourage more students to be interested in that, but also encourage more people to think about teaching and providing, being faculty in those areas. Trying to remember that. Is that 1, 2, 3?
It's 3.
It won't help if it's written down, correct?
Won't help if it's written down. STEM, underserved, the chancellor. Oh, we're also putting together, I haven't lost it completely, we're also putting together an economic model of what it really costs to go to a Minsky institution. Mm-hmm. Really, not just what the tuition is, but really putting into play how aid plays into that, how room and board plays into that, and really try to find out how we compare to other institutions and what, again, what it really cost to go to an institution. So we're putting that economic model together. Those are the four primary things we're going to work on over the next 18 months.
Great. Lisa?
Thanks. Just a follow-up. I read in the Star Tribune some time ago now, but it was just a little article about the rise in certain kinds of education, university attendance, and I think Minsky was listed. As I recall, the single biggest increase by far, not even close, was in online education. And I'm just curious if you see any competition to Minsky from online education.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, I would argue that some of Minsky's top competition comes from Capella. It also comes from Cardinal Stritch. But Minsky has dramatically increased our online education as well. I'm not going to give you a number because I can't remember it, but it's up some 30 or 35%. I want to say we have some 300,000 students on online learning. So we're seeing a dramatic increase in that as well. In fact, it's not so much about geography and place anymore as it used to be.
Again, curious, if that's the case, and again, you know, the asset is the liability, so I always, when I think about Minsky, I just noodle some of these issues in my mind. You know, one of the big advantages in some ways that Minsky has is all of the physical plant that it has all over the state of Minnesota. You know, they've become part and parcel of the communities that they serve and very important economic pieces. That can also be the liability, especially if you're talking about competition from online education. I'm just sort of curious if you noodle this kind of thinking.
Well, we don't spend a lot of time noodling how many campuses we have because that's DOA up here inside this building if we were to ever think about closing the campus. But I'm always honest, we have noodled. I mean, the amount of real estate that we have is tremendous. One of the other huge expense items that we come up to the legislature with every year is upkeep on buildings and upgrading new buildings. But I think the key thing so far, at least what we've learned in the legislature, is these institutions have become a key part of a community. And for many communities, their local college, their local two-year school is the lifeblood, probably the largest employer, the biggest economic engine in their community. So we haven't really debated whether or not 53 is too many, at least lately. But I think you're going to see more and more. For Minsky to compete and survive, you're going to have to see these campuses work more closely together, like we're doing with the Centers of Excellence. You're going to see more online education, I think. I think we're going to have to be more flexible. I think we're going to have to be much more nimble than we are as far as updating our curriculum and changing things to keep up with the changing economy.
Carl?
Yes. David, I was just wondering, when you're doing your economic study, are you going to do a cost comparison between Minsky and these Rasmussen colleges and the Cardinal Stritches per credit hour, or to see who lines up where?
That data is harder to get, but I think we're just not convinced we know what a Minsky education really costs. Again, it's always seen as, you know, what's tuition doing? And tuition went up 4%, so everybody says, well, you know, now tuition's getting, but you don't look at what's aid doing and what are grants doing and are that, you know, so we just want to get a pretty good feel, at least as a baseline, as to what the economic model is for Minsky at the four-year, the two-year, the two-year technical schools.
Great.
I'm not sure we know
yes.
today.
Can you tell us, in rural Minnesota, northwest Minnesota, where I come from, obviously there's a real need for nurses and other health professionals, an unmet need there. And when I talk to some of the two-year schools, you know, they'll quote me the figures on how many they accepted into their program, how many they turned away. Is the board taking a leadership role in helping to kind of bridge that gap there with healthcare fields?
Well, actually, I think we've expanded the number of nursing programs within Minsky. I think we've actually upped the number of nurses that graduate every year. I think we've added nursing programs at a couple of our institutions. I'm not sure we've met you know, the entire need yet, but I think we are trying, and we do look at particular areas, you know, of employment that need help. The other piece is you can't force somebody to go to a two-year technical school and become a plumber. I mean, you can't, you know, so we're trying to, and we also, you know, don't want to be in a position of training any student of any age for a job that's not around anymore. So that gets back to my nimble. We're trying to be a little more nimble here, and I'm not sure we're getting that done quite yet.
Billy?
How is the partnering with industry going?
Well, I would have to selfishly say it's going better.
Yeah, I mean, is that seen as a way of the future?
Well, I hope so. I mean, it was an interesting debate. One of the things that we asked all of the stakeholders at a recent retreat that we had was, you know, who's the customer of Minsky? Yeah. And I think we reached the conclusion that it's the student. And then quickly after that, though, we realized then it's a potential employer. And we didn't say necessarily private sector or public sector, but that would be a second level. And I think... I don't think it's hurt having the head of the Minnesota Chamber with, you know, a lot of business connections active on the board. We have a couple other business people. I think that's brought a good business perspective. So I do think that's getting better. I think prior to our arrival, I think the chancellor was working on that already. I think this chancellor realized a long time ago that, you know, he wants to turn out students that are employed. And I think there's been a pretty strong emphasis on that, but I think the short answer is I think it's even more so today.
Great. Nancy?
I'd just like to add to Brenda's question. It wasn't until the last session before last, that Minsky had the authority to develop applied doctorates in nursing, and the real problem is the shortage in nursing instructors. Mm-hmm. So I'm very pleased to say that within 18 months, the system came up with a very innovative plan, collaborative among four of the state universities, and the first students were enrolled this fall. So I think in an amazingly short period of time, we have an accredited applied nursing program for doctorates. So.
Earl?
Tom Snell said to say hello.
Hi, Earl. Yeah, I couldn't see you up there.
Yeah.
I didn't recognize
you. How's the air traffic control school doing up in St. Cloud? You still got that?
We have one that's being dismantled. See, now you're asking me very specific questions. Mm-hmm. we have one that's kind of being dismantled in Thief River Falls, and I think the other one is either in Alexandria or St. Cloud. I can't remember.
The FAA is still hiring out of there?
I don't know for sure, to be honest.
Okay. Yes, David.
Dave Larkin, Bemidji. The curriculum that you mentioned is of interest to me because, of course, as you know, I come out of the faculty, and the faculty feels a lot of ownership for curriculum. And I just guess I'd like to hear what you have to say about the trustees' relationship to the curriculum questions. What is their role in that?
Actually, I would argue, unless it's a major policy conversation, we would not have a role in that. Now, I would also tell you that not all of the trustees agree with that. I mean, we do have some trustees that would like to get down as far as curriculum. I personally don't think we belong there, again, unless there's a problem or we need to make a policy decision related to that curriculum. But I think we're going to make the bold assumption that the faculty and the university staff are going to have a better handle on curriculum than the Board of Trustees is.
Great.
But, again, that's not unanimous.
Mm-hmm. You can, second part to that,
sure.
Too, if I may. I think I heard the term nimble used with curriculum. I'm not sure what that means. Would you tell me what that means to you?
Well, I just think... And this, again, is not the board's opinion, it's my opinion. But I think we need to, the economy seems to be not bump along. I mean, the economy is moving very rapidly. I'm hoping, I don't know that we don't do it already. And actually, Nancy has pointed out one where we did it reasonably quickly. I'm hoping that we, as a Minsky system, can move pretty close to the same pace as the economy, which means from time to time there may be classes that we don't or majors that we should move away from and move on to some new things. So I'm not saying we don't do that. I'm wanting to make sure we do.
David, this has been very helpful. I mean, just so that we know, our job is to try to put a panel of candidates for four openings that really meet the needs of the trustees and the Minsky, ultimately the people of Minnesota. So I think it's been great to get a feel for what's going on. Let me just say also that our tradition is to treat incumbents as candidates. And so if you can encourage the incumbents to apply, okay, they go through our process as well.
Okay.
And I think generally tendency, we've bent over backwards to send incumbents on, but within the panel of 2 to 4 per open seat.
Right. And so that's why I think it's always good to get some new and fresh looks, but I also think some history is not, if they're willing to sign up for another 6 years,
More power. Great. Well, that has not been our tradition. We have not had as many incumbents after 6 years. They're either the employer or their own energy level has waned.
I think there's at least a couple that would like to give it another whirl.
Okay, great. Good. Well, thank you
That's
very much.
All you do. Thank you.
Great.
Thank
good.
You so much.
We'll try to find you good colleagues.
Perfect.
Great. Susan? As Susan's coming up, I just let you know that we invited the chancellor, and we happened to hit a week of vacation for him. So he will come to our we hope that the schedule so that he can be at our March meeting as a precursor to our actual selecting the interviewees. So, Susan, welcome.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. I recognize a number of you here from various parts of my life. I wanted to just thank you for asking me to come today, and I'll tell you a little bit about what I do and kind of how I fit into the process. I head up the state's Office of Higher Education. It's now a cabinet agency. Was a coordinating board, as Don remembers, years ago. And in the mid-90s, that changed. It became independent, but a state agency. And then 4 years ago, with support from really both sides of the aisle, both houses, the agency became a cabinet agency. There wasn't a cabinet agency for higher education before that. I had been working in the governor's office at the time. I'd been there about a year, and the governor, we went through a process of interviewing, and the governor had actually ended up asking me to think about taking the job, and I've been doing it for about 4 years. And it often feels like 4 years. Sometimes it feels longer than that. But in terms of the appointments process, the governor takes it very seriously, and then, you know, what happens is we'll get a list from you, and we'll get suggestions externally as well, and then there's an interview team. And some of the interviews are conducted over the telephone. Some of the interviews are conducted in person, but I've been part of the interview team in the past, one of four or so people who screen the candidates. So I think the reason they bring me in is that I have a policy, you know, kind of a practical and a policy focus, but I'm one of the people. I'm not the only person involved. Minsky is very, very important to the state. It's a critical part of what we have going on here in Minnesota, and it's becoming increasingly important as we face some workforce challenges. The governor's appointed candidates from the folks that you've recommended to him. He also has gone off the list, and I think other governors, I'm guessing, have done that before. I can't exactly tell you why he goes off the list. There may be some great candidates that come his way that folks have suggested that seem to appeal to him, but he does try to take a look at the list first. And in the past, I think the last go-around, two of the four people came from the group that you all recommended. He looks at a number of factors. Okay, one would be just look at the overall composition of the board. And I don't mean, you know, is there a butcher, baker, candle maker, but what's the breadth and experience? And when I say diversity, I mean that broadly. You know, where have people worked? What interests do they represent? Do they have systems experience? What you and David were just talking about, the importance of understanding how a system works and what a role of a trustee is versus the role of a president or a faculty member is really critical to understand if you're going to be an effective board member. I think he also really wants to make sure that there our members are the board members are interested and engaged and have an ability to work collaboratively. You know, you want to be able to speak your mind and have an individual interest, but at the same time, you have to be able to work with others because a lot of these, the board is broken down into subcommittees, and there's a lot of work that goes on at the subcommittee level. Really important for candidates to be able to think innovatively and strategically. Minnesota is at a critical point in time right now. If you're looking at any of the research that's come from the state demographer and others, we're facing some significant challenges. We have an aging population. We're going to be looking very shortly at a dip in our high school graduation. We have a growing immigrant population, and that presents both challenges and opportunities. So these are things that MNSCU will grapple with as well. And so when you're thinking about people to put on that board, it really is important for them to have an understanding of these challenges that we face. I know there was some criticism for the governor appointing a number of business people to the board. I heard that at the legislature. And I guess the way I would respond to that is that employers, you know, have broad experience. Some of it's inside their workplace, but it's also outside of their workplace. They're involved civically. Employers aren't just business people necessarily. Employers can represent all sorts of different organizations. So I think because part of the goal of what MNSCU is trying to do is improve, you know, the workforce and workforce participation, having that business or employment experience is very, very important. I think also while in having some exposure to education and education policies critical, having some education background is useful. There are folks who have not had a higher education background. I look at David. David went to college, but I don't think he's he's not been a professor to my knowledge, hasn't been a teacher to my knowledge, but he's a pretty good board member, and he has an understanding of how organizations and systems work. There's a person on the board now, Chris Rice, who has significant healthcare experience, but she had not had direct higher ed experience. And so I think it's okay, you know, to think about folks that may not necessarily have a higher education background in the mix of candidates. You've already sort of addressed this reappointment issue. I think it's important to, as David was saying, to look at length of experience as well as breadth of experience. That institutional knowledge is really important. To have a mix of old and new candidates, new members on the board is important. And the ability for those folks to take both the short view, which is kind of the day-to-day stuff that goes on, but also the long view in terms of the health of the organization. Because the number one job of MNSCU is to educate students. The board has a critical role in making sure that the organization as a whole is healthy so it can do that. And I'd be happy to answer questions. I may not be able to answer all your questions, but I'd be happy to answer them as best I can. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. Questions? Comments? Rejoinders? Really?
Do you have suggestions on how we can find the best applicants for this job? It's been tough recruiting good people. Do you have thoughts on that?
Mr. Chair and Ms. Young, I have a couple thoughts on that. One is just we do that in our own agency. We try to think, how do we get information about the importance of preparing for college? How do we get that out to students? You know, there are lots of different ways to do that, but we're constantly trying to think about better ways to approach folks. So I think you may have to just do things a little differently, perhaps, than have been done in the past. I mean, reach out to the different organizations that are prominent, involved in the state. I mean, I think of chambers. I think of education organizations. I mean, that would be, you know, in terms of outreach, that would be important to try to hit groups and make sure also when describing the role of the trustee that you're very clear about what that means. I think that people, if they understood what the trustees do, it's a really important job. And I think really explaining that in a clear, meaningful way, maybe that's already done, would be helpful. I think it's always, for me at least in my work, it's maintenance all the time. I'm never done kind of getting the word out. It's just constantly trying to beat the bushes and connect with people.
We say this every time the governor's office is here, that we really would appreciate that even if the governor had names that he was particularly interested in any time prior to our deadline putting those names in the process. The difficult part for us is if there's too much utilization of lists not from ours, it starts sending the signal that there's really two processes. There's ours and there's the other one. And I realize as every one of your predecessors to our meetings like this have said, well, we really can't control governors, and we know that. So, yeah. They have sort of an independent streak to them.
Well, I think that's a good suggestion, Mr. Chair. You know, one of the things that we have tried to do is to encourage interested folks to apply through the process. I mean, even if that person doesn't make it through the process, they could still be considered. But we sure do encourage folks to go through the process, and I have talked with people about submitting their names and being involved in the process personally.
Great. Good. Thank you. That's all you can do.
So I respect that point of view.
Joe?
Mr. Chairman. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Joe.
You inherited a lot of extra programs this last go-around. How's everything going? You got a great staff. And
What Joe's talking about is at our agency just this past year, we gained several new programs. One was a GI Bill, a Minnesota GI Bill. We administer that program with the Department of Veterans Affairs. We also have an Achieve Scholarship program, which kind of mirrors what the feds are doing with their academic competitiveness grants. If you take a core curriculum or some AP IB courses, you can get $1,200 towards college just stacked on top of your financial aid package. And you can make up to $75,000 for that. But we also have the Indian Scholarship Program at our office, and that came to us from the Department of Education. We faced a number of challenges. One is that the program had not been automated. So one of the things that we've been trying to do is automate the program. We got about 16 file cabinets in our four-drawer file cabinets in our hallway in our office, and we've had to go through the applications and trying to automate the paperwork, which has been challenging. But mm-hmm. I think it's going well. We have a liaison up in Bemidji who's just fabulous, Laura. She's just wonderful. And we're also trying to get our staff out to meet with the tribes and tribal education officers, making sure that they're connected. But I think so far it's going very well. We haven't added many staff to the agency, but we've figured out a way to make things work. So be happy to give you a more detailed update if you like.
Any other questions? Well, Susan, thank you, and I'm glad to hear that you're part of the interview process after we're done. So that's great.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, David and Susan, for taking more time out of your calendar. How are the eyes?
Perfect.
Good. Great. The approval of the minutes from the December 3rd, our kickoff meeting, 2007. They're right behind the agenda in the packet.
I'll move approval, Mr. Chair. Okay.
I'll second.
Second? Yeah. Any further any additions or corrections? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The minutes are approved. I think I'm just going to embed the chair comments in the subcommittee reports and then the recruiting update. But throw it open. Are there any questions or comments from either veterans or new members on last meeting or what we heard this morning, this afternoon so far? Any discussion? I think, David, this whole question of the issue, it still feels like sort of a new board at times, and figuring out the direct line between policy and policy governance and administration and faculty is there's still some work being done on the board on that understanding. Okay, subcommittee reports. I both subcommittees have met, and I'll take you to the draft of the report from the subcommittee on publicity and recruitment, which in my packet is right behind the board. We had a good meeting, and the goal here, if I were to say there's one goal, the goal is we don't want anybody that's a qualified candidate to not know about the opportunity in the state of Minnesota. Now, how's that for a bold assertion? And what we do is to try to make sure that every conceivable channel possible is pursued. We've talked to the governor about his talk show, and it's on the agenda for late in January. So I hope that'll happen. All the legislators get announcements of recruitment and legislative staff. We continue that practice. We've worked through all of the MinSCU channels. It includes the access to alumni newsletters. We run into a little bit of a challenge in terms of publishing schedules because, as you'll note, the date that we've asked for deadline is February 15th. So some of them are publisher little things. I talked to Susan personally about using her department list and her connections. That's probably better than the governor's mailing list is is not segregated by higher ed. And so, to be perfectly blunt, it's a pretty political list as well. And so Mayor, it didn't help us last time. We've reviewed, and I don't want to steal your thunder on the update by the staff, but we reviewed a mailing list of over 730 names, and those are out now. And we found it quite a challenge as a committee to look over and see there's been a lot of changes already in the last 2 years. So we when we send these letters, we say, open it anyway, you know, and if the person isn't there, it's still good change. I'll let you talk about the local government websites and other experiences there. We've emailed press releases to the congressional and the senatorial offices. We've used the website of the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits and the Minnesota Council on Foundations. So I think and it's not too late. It's only January 4th. If there's some glaring absence here, we'd love to hear it now because we can still get things out. Nancy?
I was thinking of the community-based organizations. I see we have nonprofits here, but one of the problems that we're addressing with the demographics and the discussion that we've heard is that we have large immigrant populations and the question of diversity in the sense of, as it was called, you know, ethnic diversity. And I was wondering, it seems that we're contacting the very traditional kinds of leadership, but there's also another level out there that I don't think we've been addressing. And I don't particularly know, Mr. Chairman, where we would get such a list, but I'm sure it exists. I also think of you were the facilitator at the retreat at MinSCU, and there were people from the community there,
right,
and they might give us some insight because I think we are looking to put forward some of that experience.
You know, I do actually. I think there is a list that they used last year for the regions. I can't remember what it's called, though, but it's going to encompass some of that.
And is that on? Have we mailed yet to that? Or
not yet to that group.
Okay.
No.
But that's doable.
Certainly, yes.
Right. Doable right away. Mm-hmm. Good suggestion. Yes.
Mr. John. Chairman, I'd just like to pick up on the current discussion. I'm not sure if you, on this mailing list, that there are news like Inside News or Circle Magazine or mm-hmm. Inner Country Today or things like that. If there aren't, I'd be happy to review the list with you.
I think they're included on our media list, too.
Yes, we have both a separate media list and a separate large contact list.
But I'll double-check, John, to make sure that's on there.
Right. We've traditionally had many of the spokesperson, the spokesman, the recorder, the variety of the traditional press, though we realize there's also continuing evolution of that, the press. Billy?
Well, I don't know the name of the group, but there has to be a trade organization for the larger manufacturing concerns in the state, beyond the Chamber of Commerce level. And I would love to see some recruiting materials sent to those organizations because they're the ones who are needing the workers, and that representation could be helpful.
Mm-hmm. Good. Don?
You talked about media, did you, and contacting the media?
Yep.
Well, as you recall in the past, our greatest return of applicants was after the Pioneer Press and the Star Tribune had a little editorial. We contacted the editorial boards. They put a little part of their editorial content about the openings, what is Minsku, how it's grown, how important it is, et cetera. After that, the application just poured right in. I mean, when you get that distribution of newspapers throughout the state.
And I sort of took that on as chair, as to try to get appointments with the editorial boards, get that on, and I got that on my to-do list.
Yeah, and I wouldn't do it now. I would wait till, you know, process is underway so that they could react quickly.
Although we can say right now the process is underway. Yeah. We are open for business as we speak. Yeah. So,
wouldn't delay too much.
Yep. And by the way, that's one thing I wanted to say to all of you is if you have contacts at your local media outlets, use them to get and just get the Sally. If they didn't get a copy of the original press release, get the Sally, and we can quickly get them emailed, faxed up. But wherever you might have local contacts, do so. Liz? Sorry.
If you're meeting with editorial boards of the big papers, do you think you could write a little op-ed piece that we could put in the smaller papers?
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah. We've sent a press release to each of the smaller papers. That's part of our media outlet. But
I like what he's saying about the changes in Minsku and, you know, kind of exciting little op-ed piece.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We hear the MinPost is added to your media list.
Right. MinPost is the emailable web thing Joel Kramer is starting. Yeah. Chris?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I don't know. Maybe the application materials were emailed out to all of us and I deleted it. I'm not sure. But if they haven't been, is that possible?
Absolutely.
And then we could forward those on?
Yep. They're also available on the web.
Yep. It's all online now.
Everything is online, both the background material and the application. So, but one hard copy, just get to Sally. Get to.
There's actually a hard copy. There should be one in your folder today.
Yeah, actually, I was just looking for it by email, too.
So sure, I'll email it out.
Yeah, why don't we just send an email?
Forward it on.
Pack it out. Mm-hmm. Just again, you're going to get tired of me saying this. You're our sales force. Mm-hmm. And it really is a tremendous source of candidates if we can get them out there. If you have any particular concerns about particular associations or groups, rather than have you go through all of them, if it comes to your mind, just get to Sally, and she can then cross-reference with the source. And do that earlier rather than later, because one of the issues that we've had over the last couple of cycles, it sort of gets end-loaded. So about February 1st, we're all beginning to get very pale about where are they, and then they tend to come in the last 2 weeks. But you never know if they are going to come in the last 2 weeks. And I think it's true to say, Billy, weren't the Regents this last year, was down.
We had the same panic there as here. Yeah. Then at the end, the names came in, but it was. I think it's very worrisome. I think the recruiting of good candidates is one of the most critical things we do, and I find that we spend more time on the interviewing and not getting those great people in, and I think we need to all go through our Rolodexes and see who the people we know.
Remember, two at-large, Congressional District 4, which is, you know, St. Paul, the east side, and Congressional District 7, which is that swath of counties from Iowa to Canada.
Yeah.
Big.
Pardon?
Big.
Big. It's helpful that our congressman from there flies his own plane. Nancy.
Excuse me, Kent. It's 3, 4, 7, and 1 at large.
It's actually, that's a mistake. I'm sorry, Nancy. It's 2 at large because there was more on the board from the 3rd district.
Oh, good. So. I mean, that makes a big difference.
Yes it does. We definitely need 4 and 7. Yep.
Okay.
3rd is represented by others because of at large.
And just so there's no mistaking, as we leave today, we're at full access to use this press release if we influence our local.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah. All of the materials Xerox, hand carry, whatever you want. If you want, okay. We can get the hard copy to you with the color. So. I think of this next 40 days or so, from June 4th to the 15th of February, as a very fluid time. So if anything comes to mind that all of a sudden, ooh, wouldn't that be great to connect with this channel of communication or that channel of communication, just get to Sally and she can help you get the material out. She didn't say she had a marketing background, but she's going to get one on this job. Any other questions for the committee? We also went through the mailing list and tried to see what we could do. Ruth, you've helped us in the past, so anything we can do would be great.
Yeah,
Thompson. Yeah. Good. Okay. Kelly? Report of the policy procedure.
We met and we reviewed all the application materials and we went through the screening process also. We did not have any changes, either of those. We talked in detail about the reference checking process, which was new last time, and everyone agreed that they thought that addition was excellent and we wanted to continue with that. Then we talked about the actual interview process and voting procedures. And again, we agreed that everything was working well. Now, I will let you know that there was two of us, there's three in total. Two of us had only been through the process once, and one was a newcomer. So we are, if anyone has any concerns, comments, things that they think should be reviewed, I guess we're open to that. So we were just, but in general, we found things were working well.
I think there's generally from those who were through the last cycle that the more informal conversations that we were able to strike up with candidates, we really did feel we got to know them pretty well.
Yeah, work well.
So, and by the way, I would say also that I did a little project for the Board of Regents, Nancy alluded to, with my old consulting hat on, and I had four over the day and a half period come up and compliment us on the cordial and graceful way they felt they were treated. As candidates, and that's great because we'd like the process to be friendly and supportive. Mm-hmm. They're sort of putting their ego out on the line, and we do know that these were candidates that did surface and were forwarded, obviously. So, but we really do want to be cordial to. Yes, Carl.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just curious: the ones that applied last year that didn't make the cut or weren't selected, let's put that way. Do we send them a letter thanking them for applying last year and asking them to please reconsider and apply again this year? And we could use their same file and just
update.
Just bring it in and say if they respond in the affirmative that they would like to be considered again, or do we just make them start from scratch?
You had the recruitment subcommittee, I believe, decided to just. Felt that if they wanted to do it again, they would reapply.
So there wasn't a special appeal to those who didn't make it last time. We just put them. They would get the normal mailing. They'd be mailed as part of the big mailing.
Well, all applicants were sent a letter of some kind. Those people that didn't make the interview, they were sent a letter thanking for your interest. Hope you keep it alive. You know, there may be opportunities in the future. Something like that. Then those that got the interview but didn't make the cut to the governor, then they were sent a letter similar. So everyone is sent a letter, but I think there's some allusion to, you know, keep it alive and maybe your interest will mature down the road.
I was thinking there's a good group there that are viable. Maybe this year they would be more acceptable than last year. Maybe we should send them something to say we would appreciate it if you could foresee coming back in, you know, or something.
Yeah.
What, Nancy?
I want to give you some informal feedback. We had a candidate who we put forward twice, and she was very angry, to say the least, and I think it might be a sensitive issue. While initially I think it's a good idea if your name is forwarded and you've been through this process, which in filling out this application and going through the interview process is pretty time-consuming and shows a serious commitment, and then to be, quote, rejected by the governor, we might be causing some hard feelings. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anybody else heard that.
No, but I agree with what you're saying.
I agree, too. It would be. I don't think if they want to go through the whole thing again, it's up to them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think if they've got interest, they'd stay attached. Yeah. And so, yep. Lisa?
To follow up on that and agree, if I had applied and not made it through the process, and then got a letter sort of requesting me to apply again, I would assume some special status that I think that I would not be entitled to assume.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I think it's a good idea to send them a letter on that.
We have had the tradition of starting from scratch each time, and in some cases there are candidates who weren't forwarded for good reasons, in other cases they were forwarded and then didn't make it, because our job is to give 2 to 4 names per opening, and the governor chooses. So.
Well, as you mentioned earlier, all incumbents are given an interview.
That's correct.
They move right to the interview process.
So, interviews, we'll find out.
So that means that you are giving special treatment to certain people.
The incumbents are...
I understand.
Incumbents
only. Right. Well, right. Still, it's a group.
Right.
But you take... How many people applied last year?
41 the last time we had. It was 41 applicants.
Yeah.
I interviewed about 18,
something like that.
So you're throwing away 25 to 30 people a year?
Oh, yeah.
And all I'm saying is, even in the letter, you could say there is no special treatment. We would just like to see you apply again. That's all.
Or
every year you're throwing away 20 people, and you're looking for qualified people, but you keep throwing out the baby with the bathwater. I just say you ought to bring them back and say, you can apply. You stand no chance better than anybody else. But, we'd like to see you put your name in again.
Mm-hmm. We could send the just sort of the generic letter that we sent to the other 730.
Well, I'm just an idea.
Sure.
I just see people going out the door. We're looking for applicants, and then we're throwing out 20 applicants a year.
Yes.
Go ahead. Well, I'm just going to say a good share of the applicants are not really qualified.
That's right.
You say are all qualified and they're thrown out. Well, a lot of them, you're just going to say no, no.
Yeah.
And I would not encourage those people to reapply.
Yeah.
Dan?
Well, I like the idea that you forwarded. It seemed fair to assume that we're starting all over again, and for us somehow to signal that we'd welcome a return of someone suggests some things that I wouldn't be very comfortable with. I think that takes the fairness and tilts it a bit.
Yep.
Yeah. And they're going to think they've got something locked up here when you walk back in.
That's an excellent point in terms of your own recruitment.
I couldn't hear
that. Earl was saying that a specific appeal from us might give them a little feel like they've got a little head start. They've been through the end. One of the important things to recognize as you do your own networking and recruiting is you have to ensure that they know it's a competitive process, and your encouragement is not really an endorsement, that you're not carrying their water for them. You're just asking them to explore what I think are one of the two best volunteer opportunities and the two most complicated volunteer opportunities between regents and MNCU trustees in the state. Yes, Nancy?
Can you remind me, Kent, Mr. Chair, I think that...
I can't. Let's stay with Kent.
Right. Okay. I believe that the incumbent trustees did come for an interview with the committee.
That's correct.
Okay, so it's not as if they don't go through the process, but I hadn't realized, because that was my first time when an applicant, when an incumbent went through, but then they are guaranteed an interview with the governor?
No.
No, no, interview.
No, I thought, yeah, because I didn't think so.
We have had the tradition of interviewing with us.
I misunderstood.
But we've had cases where we haven't even submitted an incumbent's name on to the governor.
Okay.
So we retain the ability to do that. We just think that after 6 years of service, it is a little bit extra treatment to say that we'll give you an interview. But that could be it. Angie?
I have another source I'm thinking about. Billy, is there a list of people who applied to be regents at the University of Minnesota? I mean, I happen to know that one of the current Board of Trustees at Minsky said, you know, I had applied at the University of Minnesota, then I was encouraged to perhaps look at Minsky, and it's been such a wonderful experience.
I'm probably the one who did it. I'm thinking of the same individual. Yes, I mean, I think in my own folders I have filed some of those names, and I've used them in the past to suggest. I've just used it privately.
Is there any question about our looking through the last round of regents? And again, generally speaking, what we try to do when we do individuals is we do the generic letter. And it's a letter that says, we hope you're aware of this opportunity, and we don't overly encourage in the letter. Who's chairing? Is Bob still chairing the
Yeah.
Bob?
Bob Vanessa.
He resigned.
No. Oh, okay.
Oh, who's?
Paul Devery.
Is Paul?
I think
it's been a while since we've had any meetings.
Yeah, I think Bob resigned after the last cycle, and I think Corey Elmer is vice chair, so.
I'm drawing a blank.
But Paul Devery.
He may be. He did a great job. Mm-hmm. Well, we haven't met for a while.
Yeah, well, you're off on a different cycle, too,
yeah.
So. Maybe I could call, with your permission, I could call and chair and see if they'd be comfortable with our sending out our general letter to...
Sure. Those are names that are open to everybody.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah,
okay.
Their names appear on chamber lists and industry lists and college lists. And all.
I suspect it's like anything else in that my recollection of the Regents process was that there was a little article in the Star Tribune, I assume the Pioneer Press, that said like only three people had applied. Mm-hmm. So they extended the process,
and then
a lot of people applied. So my guess is went up to about 150, I think. And so you get some great names and less great names, like anything else.
Sure.
But it was certainly a fairly large pool of talent.
Right.
So.
But it was a sort of a panicky note in the Pioneer book papers did. They did a real
I'm
citizen step forward.
With Don's permission, I'm going to try to get to the editors a little earlier than later in the process
looking at the schedule, and I think you're right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, between January 8th and February 15th, that's not an awful lot of time.
That's right. Yep.
It's only 5 weeks.
Okay, so policies and procedures will stay with the same, and we'll go through the cycle, and we'll learn what's up. Scheduling. We have two things to schedule. One is to schedule the meeting at which we will review the material that we've been submitted and invite 16 to 20 candidates for personal interviews. And then the blocking off 3 days for interviews on an hourly basis. Let me first do the first meeting and suggest sometime in the first 2 weeks of March. And we've been able to usually do that in about a 2-hour meeting.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you send those out to all of us.
As soon as the deadline is over, we did one or two things last year. We either did it in hard copy or we did it with PDF files.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
PDF files means you got to have a pretty fast printer and you print out a lot of paper.
Yeah.
Hard copy, it's up either way. You can and do that.
We talked about that. I think Sally said she was going to be able to put all of them online. Because, like, what I did was I wanted the hard copy, but prior to that, I actually went online and started looking at them.
Right.
So I think they're available both ways.
Yep.
Very good.
How is Friday? I mean, is it the end of the day? It's the end of the week? Is that a... We're a much better attendant. And I'm looking at March 4 or 11.
March? Oh, Friday.
March 4 or 11 for our candidate interview selection process.
March doesn't have a
4. I'm sorry. I'm looking at April.
How about March
7? March 7th. March 7th, or we could do... I'm out of town the 14th, unfortunately, having said that. So let me first start with, how's March 7th?
Good. March 7th, good for me.
Good for me, good. If it's good. Relatively early in the afternoon, I have a later afternoon.
Well, can we do 1 o'clock?
1 o'clock.
1 o'clock?
Sure. One, yep. 1 to
good.
3, yeah.
Fine with me.
I know. Joe, announce your quarter for us, just so we can all be envious.
Well, I'm retiring on the 25th of this month. And on the 27th, I'm going to Maui for 2 months.
Yeah.
Be back the end of March.
Right.
Okay. For hopefully the interviews.
Yes. Yeah. So March 7th,
one o'clock p.m.
You will receive. We have the deadline established as 15th of April.
February.
15th of February. I hope we don't need to extend it, but this gives us a little time if we do have to extend it 7 to 10 days. Mm-hmm. But let's just hope that our recruiting works well and we don't. Yeah. With the week, you will receive at the latest, we hope the 28th of March.
February.
I'm sorry, 28th of February.
I'll bring you my calendar.
Yes, well, I made a mistake of doing two copies. Okay.
Yeah, we can have it by the end of February.
End of February, oh, it's a leap year. Is it?
Yeah, we got an extra day there.
Yeah, so by the 29th, you'll have hard copy, but you will have access earlier to that, and Sally will email you the comments to do that. Okay.
Well, Ken, as I recall, we were sent periodic copies as they came in. We didn't wait and batch them all up and send them in a big package. Am I right on that?
I don't remember.
I got them in a big lump.
The first week, and we got maybe 5 or 6. And
right.
You know?
I got a whole batch.
I think we got a batch.
Yeah, I got a big whole batch.
Well, I remember that, but I think that's because they all... Those all came in at one time.
I just read them on the screen and then put it off what I wanted.
I think there may have been a trickle of 2 or 3 or something that came in late that we then considered.
Maybe that's...
That may have been.
But let us know so we can at least see them on the screen.
Yep. And we have a complete email list, so we'll be in constant contact. Okay, so 1 o'clock on March 7th is the meeting where we'll establish and block a full 2 hours for that. Mm-hmm. That's when we'll include our invite list. For the interviews, I hope you are representative of the polling that we conducted. And 16 favored the week of March 31st and 9 the last week of March. So, and I know for Joe, he'll be back for the week that starts March 31st. So I'm going to ask if we could block off Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, April 2nd, 3rd, and 4th for our heavy lifting work.
Yeah, that's good.
What day? April 2nd, 3rd, and 4th.
Okay.
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Friday, we've often been done by about 1 or 1:30 in the afternoon, but block the day just in case.
Yep.
We'll schedule about 8 interviews on Wednesday, 8 on Thursday, 4 on Friday. We can. And then eat lunch and vote.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Where do we do that?
We do that here. We'll find, and if we do it early enough, it'll be busy legislative session, busy time, but we'll find a room.
Well, I think
reserve the room.
Yep. Sure. Last year, just I think we actually ordered lunch or brought lunch in and started deliberating right away with over lunch. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Just so we can get out of town.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay. Is there anybody at this table right now where April 2nd, 3rd, or 4th won't work?
I'm not sure with the rule for me or not.
Okay. And Kelly, you knew that was going to be a problem. So can you still participate in the March 7th?
Yes.
Okay.
I can do it.
Okay. Carl?
I just shift to evening appointments.
One of those days. Okay. The policy on if you miss a day, you can't vote on the first round of that includes the you can't vote for a candidate you didn't interview on the first round of one of the four seats that we're trying to fill unless you've listened to the tapes. And that gets to be quite a daunting task. But there is that option if you can get to the tapes before the actual vote. So just one day, Ruth? Oh, okay. Okay, all right. Well, it's just the nature of the beast. And if we can email those who aren't here to have them those two dates, that would be great. Okay, so 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. This gives you a little time before.
Well, I can take evening appointments those 3 days.
That's right. Earl's an accountant working on income taxes. Every other year,
Every time. We
wear them out.
Right. Sacrifices.
Right.
It is. This year, it's going to be tough.
With AMT?
AMT is one problem. They haven't got the IRS hasn't even got the forms printed yet. On the top of that,
good.
If you give anything to charity, you can't just write cash anymore.
Right.
You got to have check. Cancel checks or a receipt.
Good heavens.
And over $250, you have to have a letter from the organization you gave it to. Mileage books you have to have. If you use a cell phone, you must have the receipts on a cell phone to tell us which are business and which are not business.
Gee, they're making a lot of fun.
It's getting tough, and it's a $1,000 fine on the accountant if we make a mistake.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, oops is right.
Okay, so we have March 7th for our interview selection meeting, our interviewees, and April 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. We normally started about 8, so for those of you out of town, the night before, if you need to, is fine, and the hotel is covered, part of our expenses, so nearby. And we'll get the rooms out as quickly as we can. Again, the next 40 days, your main task is recruiting, and your and Sally is sort of our resident staff to get you whatever materials you need, and my job is to try to get the editorials out and other ongoing activities as well. 4, 7, and 2 at large. Any other questions? Any other comments?
I've got one.
Yes, John.
And maybe I'm missing it in the papers, but I'm just wondering if it would be helpful, at least on a personal basis, as I'm talking to people about this, if there is any document that would give us or give me a little bit more of the background of the current trustees. I see a list of names. Mm-hmm. Is there something that would be more broad? I'm thinking back to David's comment
mm-hmm.
that
yes.
maybe a few more educators this time around and Susan's comment that sometimes mm-hmm. they've got skills that don't show up in the generality. And there might be people who say, who's there now and why would I be mm-hmm. somebody they might be interested in? I'm just wondering what is available.
Nancy?
Yeah, I think if you go to the website for MNSCU, you can locate the Board of Trustees, and I think they have a short blurb. Otherwise, Linda Cole, K-O-H-L, Sally at MNSCU, mm-hmm. is the PR person, and she has biographies of everybody.
Okay.
So
I can get that too before you.
Yeah, thank you. Go through Sally for that. Don't forget that. Yes, David?
I want to go back just a little bit on the 40 hours per month. Mm-hmm. I attempted to recruit a couple of people, and when I said 40 hours per month, they're gone. And we had some discussion earlier about that, and David Olson made a couple of comments. I'm just wondering how I can word that a little bit better to recruit some people that are good people. I mean, is it 40 hours every month? I mean, I'm looking for some help here in what I can say.
I'd probably say 20 to 40 hours, depends on the work. And some of it's going to be at home, you're just reading. And so maybe you can cut it down to 30. Because when you're talking 40 hours a month, you're talking maybe 2 days of reading every month. And not going to a meeting, just staying home and reading. And then you're going out there. So.
I think there are three component pieces to the time allocation. One is study, just to be able to digest the material. The second is board meetings, which is really 2 days a month on average, but then there can be committee meetings. Those committee meetings use technology, so it's not always with travel to committee meetings. And then there are certain sort of, I'd say, symbolic events where board members are welcome to graduations, retirements of presidents or that. And that's more discretionary, but helpful. So, I said earlier, it's spread over a 7-day week. And so it's Sunday evening reading and some evening with reading for the study part. But it's at the same time, we don't want to sugarcoat the time commitment. It is a big volunteer job. Any other questions? That was a great question, David, because as I used earlier the comment, you're our sales force now, so if there are other questions or comments, feel free either to get back to me directly or to Sally. Or to any of your other colleagues. Talk to Joe. He's done this before. Until he leaves town.
Yeah, right. It's only 2 months.
Well, that's tough. Well, you'll be back by the second, right? So you'll be able to join us?
Yeah, I will.
Great. Good.
I got willing and
good.
Deep
down.
That's what he's going to do.
And I don't want to ruin.
Humpback whale doesn't get me over there.
Right. Great. Well, is there anything for the good of the order? Okay, well, Happy New Year. We're launched. Productive hunting for the next 40 days. And Joe, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Great.
Also, Sally? I do have some hard copy applications if anyone wants to take them to hand out.
Okay, Sally has hard copy right now. Oh, and don't forget, as many of you as possible can fill out your per diem. I can sign them now and facilitate. If you're like me, you haven't gotten your first per diem, so it takes a little time to process.
Oh, you sure can. He's looking at the picture, Joe. And I numbered the backs of it, And I numbered the backs so you can line them up.
What day was it?
It was pretty happy.
Yeah.
It was the first day.
Yeah. Hey, George.
I'm going to tell you.
Right there. Yeah.
Boy, that sun was bright on my car today. Oh, I couldn't see the sign. I did too.
Not used to it.
Here,
there you go. Yep. I-